back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 123, we feature an interview with NBC's executive producer about their Premier League coverage. Univision announces a name change and a strategic partnership with Televisa. TV winners and losers from Liverpool and Tottenham's Champions League miracle comebacks. Plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section, as well as Kartik's thoughts on the first week of Open Cup streaming coverage from ESPN+. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Now, Kartik, we have to start with the UEFA Champions League, and before we go into talking about the coverage and kind of how we experience these games, probably in many different ways in terms of watching them on television, you have to think in some ways, Kartik, the strange thing about the UEFA Champions League is really when, I mean, it's obviously it came from the European Cup and UEFA went ahead and thought, okay, how can we improve the European Cup? Let's change it from a round-robin knockout competition. Let's make it into more of a group stage. Let's make it into more of an event. And really, when you think about it, the UEFA Champions League was intended really to be a TV and attendance vehicle for Europe. That was going to be kind of the best teams from Europe competing in a European competition. And I'm sure that at the time they thought, okay, well, maybe people from overseas would be interested in this. Slowly but surely, maybe TV ratings would increase in different countries. Maybe Asia, maybe Australia, maybe Africa, maybe America. Who knows? But the idea of this tournament was a European tournament. Here we go, Kartik. And in this past week, we've got the whole world watching these tournaments. Every kick of the ball, every game. It's a global event. This Champions League. I mean, especially this past week too is probably the best semi-final series in the history of the UEFA Champions League, which says a lot because there's been some entertaining games over the years. But I was just completely floored by how everyone around the world is so tuned into this competition, which is really supposed to be a European competition, but really has turned into a global event. What do you think, Kartik?
Yeah, this might be the tipping point that propels the discussions of Europe, continental football, continental competitions, not necessarily continental domestic leagues. Everything, the tipping point that pushes it past domestic leagues. I don't know if this increases the push 2024 for European Super League. I was at the Sport Decision Makers Conference in Miami this week. There was going to be one in London in 2 months with similar participants. We heard from a number of people talking about 2024 and what's going to happen if they move European matches to the weekend, what that does to domestic leagues. It was a general sports conference. I mean, soccer slash football was one component. Heard a lot about auto racing, and basketball, college sports in the U.S., but that was the one of the major discussion points about this sport was 2024, what happens with Europe. Then, as the conference is ending, it was just incredible timing, and this shows you the power of European football, you know, the power of Liverpool and Barcelona, but also just power of European competition. As the competition is ending, the conference is ending, Wijnaldum scores his first. So then everyone is frantically leaving the conference room trying to find this game. Then Wijnaldum scores a second. It's 3-3 on aggregate. Finally, the decision is made. Just let's connect the computer to a television in the conference reception area. And everybody, even American sports executives, even you know, people who aren't soccer fans, who, you know, might be baseball or basketball or auto racing, they knew how important it was for the majority of people at this conference that were still around. And we watch it, and we watch the magic of Trent Alexander-Arnold and Divock Origi and that winner. And you could just feel the power of Champions League. The next day, I'm setting up a U.S. Open Cup match. The next day, having some meetings after the conference, a number of my British colleagues are Spurs fans, and they're desperate as they're flying out to London to find a way to watch a match. You know, I give them some tips. I think they all did get to see it. Then I go to the Miami FC game, Chris. U.S. Open Cup match. I think a lot of our listeners probably know the result. It was a huge cup set, if you will, as Neil Blackman, our friend, termed it. Biggest cup set of the first round of the U.S. Open Cup, according to him. But prior to the match, I'm actually on the phone with you trying to get an update on the match, right? And I think, oh gosh, I'm not going to see this thing. Walk into the stadium, go up to my press box where I do my duties, running my duties, and lo and behold, computer up, phones on, everyone's watching the match. I have to tell you, I do work at a lot of domestic football events on Saturdays and Sundays. And the Premier League is big. There's no two ways about it. But I have not seen around events that I'm working or I'm attending, even with general sports people, the kind of energy and enthusiasm and interest in matches that I saw the last 2 days around Champions League. Now, part of it is that there are English clubs that were making incredible comebacks and incredible storylines. Part of it is that for whatever reason, be it my British colleagues, be it friends here in the United States, I'm around a lot of Spurs fans, a lot. I mean, I probably know more Spurs, actually hardcore Spurs fans than hardcore fans of any other club. But there was something just that even the Premier League, domestic competitions, Bundesliga, La Liga don't capture that happened the last 2 days that I saw, I witnessed. Powerful stuff. Great timing for Turner to have the rights.
Yeah. Yeah, Turner, TNT are so lucky in terms of this. I mean, Fox, for many, many years, I think was always dreaming of really kind of a, whether it was an all-Premier League matchup in the final or if it was a Real Madrid against Barcelona. And oftentimes, you could sense the emotion and kind of atmosphere dropping in the Fox Sports studio after the full-time whistle. Whenever, say, it was maybe, I don't know, Bayern Munich had advanced to the final instead of, say, a Manchester United or a Juventus had reached the final. And there's nothing wrong with Juventus or Bayern Munich, but in terms of the fan base for those two clubs, just as two examples, they're tiny compared to some of these other clubs from around the world, whether it's Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool, etc. And of course, last season's UEFA Champions League final between Real Madrid and Liverpool, that was one of the few times that Fox Sports had the good fortune of having two clubs with two massive fan bases meeting each other in the final. And here we go with Turner Sports in the very first season that they're doing the Champions League. For them, this has got to be one of the dream finals. I mean, you've got two teams that, whether, obviously from England, but from a very Anglo-centric fan base. So Liverpool with a huge supporters base. Tottenham Hotspur with a rapidly growing fan base in the United States. And you've got these two clubs meeting in the final. Obviously, Univision, this is a big loss for them because on Tuesday, I had a chance to attend a press conference, and there the president of Univision, Deportes, was talking about how he was looking forward to the prospect of a Barcelona against Ajax final. And for them, that would have been perfect in terms of Barcelona with a huge Spanish-speaking audience interested in watching that match. And Ajax, I mean, the story with the ties to Barcelona, the story is about Johan Cruyff, kind of the David and Goliath, that would have been a perfect final for them. The other thing I'll say, Kartik, is that this past week, these games, I mean, it's hopefully some of the listeners who are hardcore soccer fans had an opportunity to introduce maybe general sports fans to these games, because I would think that anyone, no matter what fan, if you're a fan of NFL, baseball, no matter what sport it is, if they had an opportunity just to watch these two games this week, and just it was almost like you couldn't make it up, really. Hopefully they were hooked on soccer, because these were two examples of great games. And it's not all about the English Premier League, the clubs going all the way through. I think it's just the storylines in terms of the way that these games played out. For the TV viewer, it was fantastic watching. I mean, in some ways, for Turner, really, the game did the talking for them for themselves. I mean, the games themselves stood so... You mean these are games we will always remember, probably for the rest of our lives. In terms of, do you remember back in 2019 these matches? And you, Kartik, luckily had a chance to kind of enjoy this with other people. I was watching it from my home office, so I didn't get a chance to. Other than my family just screaming and shouting, these were just incredible games to watch. And for the sport of soccer, I think it's a huge plus. And for Turner Sports, this should be massive.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And the other thing that I think really came out of it is a bonding of casual American sports fans saying, my God, soccer can be this cool. At least I saw that because, again, I was at a sports decision makers conference. A lot of people were saying that after Liverpool, Barcelona. Now, those are brands they know. Ajax and Spurs are not necessarily brands they know, but just got a lot of feedback that, wow, this is tremendous. And as I said, I was around a lot of Spurs fans from the UK this week. It's an odd thing, Chris. I think you and I have talked about this privately. For whatever reason, so many of my colleagues, both in the UK and then in the US, and people we've worked with, people that we know here are Americans, younger Americans, are Spurs fans. It's just a recent phenomenon where a lot of people have become fans of that club. But I was talking to one of the long-term British Spurs fans that hung around, didn't fly back to London yesterday, and came to the Miami FC game in the evening. And he said, you know, the worst part about this, about it being Liverpool, is that they're going to buy up all the tickets to go get to Barcelona. Yeah. We're going to have to, I'm going to have to get back to London tomorrow, Thursday, when we're recording this, and get my ticket right away. So there's a genuine fear that Liverpool fans, because we know how they travel. But at the same time, I think for Spurs, this is Liverpool has had many magical European nights. Now, you could argue this is the greatest European night they've ever had, but they've had many magical European nights. They've been to 8 or 9 European Cup/Champions League finals now. I think it's 9. They've been just at the top of the heap in football terms for generations. Spurs have not been, even though, funny thing, 8 of the last 10 seasons in the Premier League, Spurs have finished ahead of Liverpool in the table. But most people don't know that. But this is a bigger occasion for their club. Yeah.
Once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. Right. I think they're going to get to Madrid. I think they're going to be fine in terms of packing that place and just creating energy and excitement and just a one of a kind atmosphere for this Champions League final, because they know this is a one off for them and in all likelihood and it'll be tremendous and it's incredible because Pochettino is a manager I have so much time for. I think, I mean, we talk about Guardiola and Klopp and all these, you know, elite managers. But I think what he's done with the resources, with the limitations, just tremendous.
And TNT, I mean, what are the odds of Steve Nash being the person that's going to be, you mean, that they hired Steve Nash? Obviously, they didn't know that Spurs were going to go all the way to the Champions League final. But just the good fortune that they have in terms of having somebody who is so ingratiated with the game, but also in terms of his career in basketball and being a Tottenham Hotspur supporter. For a lot of kind of casual fans, like mainstream fans, that's going to pull them in, just seeing Steve Nash crying on set, just getting all emotional, maybe even more emotional about this than maybe some of the basketball honors that he had won. And that's going to pull people in there too. In terms of the coverage itself, just a couple of things real fast is that Wednesday, I thought there was a lot of filler. I mean, they had an hour pre-game to talk about two teams. There was a lot of filler in terms of the Champions cartoon series. They had the quick-fire questions, which I think is really silly. Like, do you think Ajax will win or Spurs will win? And it just seems to be a lot of filler there. On Tuesday, Kate Abdo, I'm not sure what she's thinking, but in the beginning of the game, right as the teams are coming out, and as they're doing You'll Never Walk Alone, she's talking all over it with Moadu, back and forth. Moadu gets something stuck in his throat. He's coughing. It's just a really bad look. And actually, Stu Holden jumped in and said, I just want to hear You'll Never Walk Alone. And that shut up the entire crew. Everyone silenced themselves. And then you were able to hear maybe the last minute or so of You'll Never Walk Alone. Now, post-match, they didn't make that same mistake. And to the credit, they fixed that. So post-match, as the anthem started playing after the full-time whistle, they just sat back and let that the song sing. And to me, I think, I don't know, I'm not sure if Kate Abdo, a little bit too talkative, she's not focused enough on what's happening in front of her. And I thought she should know better in terms of that case. The Fernando Perez episodes pre-game is usually good. This one was a strange one. It was with the Liverpool fan Kevin Murphy, who's famous for singing one of the Liverpool songs. And That was very surreal for anyone who watched that. That was kind of, is this guy for real or is this put on? I'm not sure. But overall, I mean, TNT, Turner Sports really lucked out on this one. And I'm looking forward to the final, which is going to be on TNT. I got the confirmation. There were some question marks at the beginning of the season whether the final would be on TBS or TNT. It is going to be on TNT, as well as the Europa League final, which will also be on TNT. Now, Kartik, this past weekend, the Premier League, I mean, talking about the Champions League and just the drama that we had there, obviously with the Premier League games this past weekend, going down to the wire with both the Liverpool-Newcastle game and then the Man City-Leicester game on the Monday, and, of course, Vincent Kompany's goal. Monday was incredible. Tuesday was even better. Wednesday was through the roof. For Premier League teams and Premier League viewing, it's been an extraordinary week.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, I'll admit, though, I thought the best game, most dramatic game of the weekend was actually Werder Bremen and Borussia Dortmund, where it was back and forth. Dortmund took a 2-0 lead. They had to get all 3 points. Bremen had to get all 3 points. Dortmund's chasing the title. Bremen's chasing a European spot. And back and forth, open match. As it turns out, it was so open. Both teams were so desperate, they got a draw. But it was one of those rare games where a team playing for the title wasn't facing off against a team that was bunkered, right? That wasn't trying to win themselves. So as it turns out, it was just back and forth, really good football. The Manchester City match I did not see. The Liverpool-Newcastle match was interesting because I think this is just like the emotions about Liverpool, right, and people's views of Liverpool. So Fabinho dives to get the free kick, which obviously Origi scored on. And you're hearing for two days on Twitter, soccer Twitter, even from, you know, some people in the game, Liverpool are cheats, you know, this and that. Then, you know, Manchester City wins because the company's a dramatic strike, and you're hearing, you know, too bad for Liverpool, but I think there's like a snarky satisfaction about it, right? Most people, it's like, yeah, they're not going to win the title. But then Tuesday happens, and our entire kind of view and sympathy towards Liverpool got turned around. Klopp is so likable. This is a huge factor working in Liverpool's favor, even among people who don't like Liverpool, and there are a lot of people. There are more people who don't like Liverpool than maybe any club in the world other than people who don't like Real Madrid. And it was very it was interesting to see that change. And I have to say about Fabinho personally, I thought he was the best player on the pitch on Tuesday. Maybe it's me. Those people who know me know I really appreciate what number sixes and number eights do more than any other positions in football. And I just thought, especially getting an early booking, he was brilliant. The thing that was really kind of interesting to me, Chris, is how it is going to be interesting to me now is coming into this week, how NBC, obviously they have title deciders, only the second time on Championship Sunday in their six-year run that they've had the title on the line. And ironically, the last time they had the title on the line, their first year, was these two clubs also, yep, Manchester City and Liverpool. But I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say this, and, you know, feel free to comment and tweet at us or send in letters for next week's show. I just think the Premier League finish is kind of, maybe we have to come down from the last 2 days. I just feel like it's overshadowed. I think we're all talking about June 1st in Madrid and a one-off match between Liverpool and Spurs more than this title. I
think it's the other way. I think it's the complete other way. I think in many ways, in terms of watching the matches on Saturday and Sunday and Monday, of course, and Monday's Man City, that late goal, just a brilliant goal. And then you have kind of at that point, you kind of think, well, at this point, as of Monday, it looks like Man City's probably going to win it. And we'll go ahead and win the Premier League title. After Tuesday, you start to think, okay, well, if Liverpool can do that, anything can happen. This was just kind of almost a miracle. And then Wednesday happens, and you think, okay, well, if Spurs can do that, I mean, anything is possible. And I think in many ways that this builds up the confidence. I mean, Liverpool winning on Tuesday, in a strange way, probably helped Spurs, their self-belief, their confidence, saying, okay, going into Wednesday, thinking, okay, if Liverpool can do that against Barcelona, why can't we do that against Ajax? Why can't we go to Ajax and play that type of style where both teams were first to the ball so many times. They were just putting their bodies on the line. You could see that they were giving, I mean, 100% every single player. And I think going into this Premier League weekend, part of it's on the fans' self-belief, but on the players' self-belief. I think it's anything is possible on any given day. And after that first round, the first leg, when Barcelona beat Liverpool 3-0, which I thought was a kind of a misleading scoreline. I mean, Liverpool controlled that first half. Is everyone thought that it was done and dusted. It's over. And I think going into this weekend, I think everyone's going to be watching this with a new set of eyes. They're thinking, okay, yes, Man City's probably going to win at Brighton. Liverpool probably are going to beat Wolves, but Wolves is a very difficult team. They're a team that a lot of us have appreciated all season. They've got an opportunity to win that game, but anything is possible. And I think for the Premier League weekend on Sunday, the Championship Sunday, everyone goes into there thinking, you never know what's going to happen. And to me, actually, there's going to be even more interest, even more expectations that something might happen on Sunday. And it might be that nothing happens. It might be that Man City wins comfortably, Brighton isn't a very good team, and Liverpool does whatever against Wolves, it doesn't really matter. But at the end of the day, it's going to get people more interested in these games, I believe.
Or they both might drop points. I'm telling you, since Brighton had that stinker against Bournemouth a few weeks ago, they've been pretty good. And Wolves, we know, particularly against top six sides, are fairly good. So I think one of them is going to drop points, maybe both, honestly, especially given the law of averages, which is you can't keep winning matches the way both clubs have. Real quickly on the comeback for Liverpool, I'm not sure it was totally unexpected. I think people felt like Liverpool were wasteful in the first leg, but Dembele not finishing those chances at the end of the match to make it 4-0 or potentially 5-0 for Barcelona in the first leg left the door open, and let's not forget what happened last year. Absolutely famous a commentary in that match by Peter Drury, the Barcelona-Roma match. Yep. There were a lot of experts around football, including the likes of Gab Marcotti, saying, you know what, there's a good chance. I mean, when Marcotti first brought it up on ESPN FC, Dan Thomas said, oh, you're just being contrarian. He said, I'm not being contrarian. It happened last season. There is a clearer template that can be followed by Liverpool for how Roma, after losing the first leg 4-1 in Barcelona, and of course they had the away goal, which helped, went home and beat them 3-0 and advanced. And he was right. And there were other people saying that based on the first leg, the scoreline was a little misleading. Barcelona ended up being wasteful at the end. Maybe they can come back. Still, I think the thing that made it even more dramatic, Chris, was that, okay, Origi scores quickly, right? Henderson has that shot. It's 1-0 Barcelona, Liverpool. At this point, I'm just following it on the minute-by-minute. But I'm also on Twitter, and I'm in the Sport Decision Makers Conference. The thing that happened was Liverpool not getting a second goal the rest of the first half made people think, oh, yeah, it's done.
Right.
That was really kind of what did. Same thing with Spurs. Because coming into the day, like I said, I've been around Spurs fans all week. Coming into to Wednesday, Spurs fans were very upbeat. We didn't play well. We had these injuries. It's now we're only down 1-0. Sissoko is now fully fit. He wasn't fully fit for the first leg. We're going to go. We have an attacking formation, especially when the team sheet came out. We got Son. We've got Lucas Moura up top. We'll score a couple goals today, and we're only down 1-0. It was then the first half I think I even told you, Chris, I was in an office, these meetings, and then had to go to the Miami FC match. The plan was, drive up at halftime. It was like after the second goal, it was like, get in the car now. And I think I gave you a call.
Well, actually, you called me at halftime of the Spurs-Ajax game. And I said, don't worry about it. Game's over. I said that the Spurs look absolutely horrible in this first half. They have no chance. Ajax completely controlled that first half. And it just goes to show, I mean, same thing with Liverpool-Barcelona when they played the first leg, where Liverpool controlled the entire first half of that match in Barcelona at the Camp Nou, is how dramatic these games can shift and turn and change in whether it's the second half or the first half. And that was in some ways why the Spurs-Ajax game was even more amazing, the comeback, because I think a lot of people thought, okay, Spurs are out. There's no chance they're going to come back in this one. While with Liverpool, you knew that goals were going to come. It was just we were just waiting for that Barcelona goal, that one Barcelona goal that would have won them the game, which would have made a huge difference. But it never came. It hit the post, or there was good saves, or blocks, or Virgil van Dijk just doing brilliant jobs in defense. One more thing about the Champions League, Kartik, is the commentators. So the Ajax-Spurs game, we had Guy Mowbray and Stuart Robson, and I thought they did a good job there. The Liverpool-Barcelona game, Martin Tyler and Alan Smith. And Martin Tyler got a lot of criticism on this one, in this game, because oftentimes, and this has been going on for years, but a lot of people, especially people that are used to more passionate soccer commentators, so whether it's Latin American soccer commentators or others, think that Martin Tyler is too dry. He's just too dry, he's boring, he's just monotone. And I disagree with that completely. I think Martin Tyler, yes, he's old school in terms of his commentating style, but in this Liverpool-Barcelona game, he was very measured. As he went through the game, his usual Martin Tyler self, you mean usually adding in some good, great commentary, nothing wrong with it. But when Liverpool started scoring those goals, and especially, I think, the second or third one, and the energy in that stadium had changed, the atmosphere had changed, had gone up several levels, he matched that level of energy and excitement and atmosphere blow by blow. And his timing in terms of his commentating, the words that he was uttering, were perfect because it summed up the energy in the stadium, summed up what was happening on the pitch. And through the TV set, we felt that. I thought he did a fantastic job, and I thought that his style is very much that type of style where it is kind of measured, measured, measured. And then when something amazing happens, the words he utters, it's like pure poetry. I loved it, and I thought he did an incredible job.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people who criticize this style of commentary, particularly here in the States, and I'm really quite tired of having a match on and then a commentator scream. And this is particularly true among American commentators, even more than, you know, Latin commentators, as you mentioned, or some British commentators, scream when there's an opportunity on goal, yeah, or when there's, you know, some sort of chance. I mean, I commentate on the Miami FC matches and have for a few seasons now, and then previous to that, Fort Lauderdale Strikers matches. I've tried to measure my tone, but I also realize it's an American audience mostly, have to inflect in a certain way. Martin Tyler's call on the Origi goal, the fourth goal. I mean, obviously, Origi scored two goals. The winner was brilliant because he was measured. His tone, he had raised his tone slightly, but he didn't scream, "Oh my goodness, Liverpool!" Mm-hmm. He didn't do that.
Yeah.
And what he did is he said very little. He had increased his tone, and he let Anfield do the talking.
Right.
And it was brilliant. I mean, I loved it. I mean, he did it after the second and third goals also, because that was when you felt that European night at Anfield, this is something special. And he said very little. Now, he did raise his tone. I would disagree with those people who say, oh, he was monotone. The idea was to let the occasion, which was a European night at Anfield, unlike maybe any other European night in the history of that ground, which has had some of the most famous European nights on record, do the talking.
Yeah, and even in that first leg too, with that obviously the Messi free kick for Barcelona in that first leg, his commentary was amazing in that one. In terms of, I think he had compared Messi to a god, and that we were witnessing a soccer god on the field, and that was so. I think some people probably think that he's kind of too pro English or too pro Premier League. When he's not, he's just somebody that enjoys the game, no matter who's doing well. I mean, he's definitely going to get given the credit.
Although English, I have a bone to pick with a lot of English fans this week. And we should have done this last week, but I didn't. I'm sorry. Their treatment of Gary Lineker, who is a former Barcelona player. By the way, think that's often forgotten. Thinking is, well, he's English. He's English national team player. He's face of so many years of BBC Match of the Day and other things. He should be pro Liverpool. He should be pro English. So Lineker reacted to that goal. We've seen the outtake, right, of it. The way he reacted to it. Mm-hmm. He's a former Barcelona player, and it's Messi. So I think that there's the accusations of Premier League bias for Martin Tyler. I don't buy into at all. Similarly, I don't like the fact that some Premier League fans, and I think a lot of them are Premier League fans in the U.S. and in Australia and places that are not the U.K., who don't really know Gary Lineker, think that he should reflexively be biased towards an English club, especially against a club he played for, a club that he's connected to, a club that he still has a lot of sentiment for. If you listen to Gary Lineker talk about Barcelona and the meeting of that club. So that was ridiculous to him. Just sorry.
There's been a lot of that, though. Even this week, Kartik, there was clips on Twitter, I think, of Rio Ferdinand celebrating after Spurs had won that late winner through Lucas Moura, the late goal to win it on away goals, and him just like completely freaking out. Glenn Hoddle beside him, I guess it was the BT Sport coverage. But there's been a lot of focus on the commentators and analysts and their reaction in the studio. And we had that too on TNT on Wednesday, where we had post-match, they showed footage of Stu Holden running around the set celebrating, and of course Steve Nash too, just celebrating, and Tim Howard kind of sitting at the desk going like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I'm witnessing here. So there's been a lot of feedback, criticism. There's a lot of different takes on this too, because like a lot of people say that they shouldn't be doing that. They should be more reserved. They should be more neutral. And actually, one of the questions we have in the listener mailbag goes into that a little bit too. There's two sides to that one, but we'll get into that in the listener mailbag. One more thing, Kartik, before we head on to the next section, and that's Europa League. We're recording this on Thursday, so the second leg of the semifinals will have been probably over by the time you listen to this podcast. But last week, I watched the first legs, the Frankfurt-Chelsea game, and Valencia against Arsenal. And actually, I watched the Frankfurt-Chelsea game more closely, and pre-match for Europa League, BR Live, trying something completely different. They've taken the three writers from Bleacher Report and had them on set and just gave a pre-game. And it was so amateurish, so awful, a really, really bad look for UEFA too. I mean, if I'm UEFA, I'm a broadcaster, I'm looking at this thinking, okay, the Europa League is not the best competition in the world by any means, but in many ways, the way that BR Live has streamed it has lowered the value of this tournament in that there's no games on television except for the final, and the coverage has been horrible. Even with BR Live too, watching that Frankfurt against Chelsea game, I have a fiber connection, so I get 1 gigabit megabits per second, and BR Live's horrible. I lost count the number of times it freezed mid-game, and I had to refresh the browser. This is not just this one game. This has been happening all season, but just really, really poor all across the board. And TNT and Turner Sports and Bleacher Report Live has so much work to do to get this fixed for next season, but it's not a good look. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. So we've got some major news coming this week from all different areas. Actually, before we get to that, I always forgot, Kartik. Open Cup. So Open Cup this week on ESPN Plus for the very first time. All the games available in this round. I didn't get a chance to watch the games, but what was your thoughts about the coverage that you saw?
Commentary is a mixed bag. I think that there are some very good commentators. There have been some very bad ones, too. It was nice to have a little halftime intro with ESPN tape, John Champion and Taylor Tolman talking about the history of the competition. I thought they did a good job of also showing that it was a historic competition. They kind of branded it similarly to the way we see the FA Cup matches branded in England. However, I mean, it's actually being done by the production by the same company that does USL Productions based in Fort Lauderdale. So it had a USL feel to the broadcast, which, you know, makes it more like the League Cup, right? Because the League Cup broadcasts are exactly the same as the Football League broadcasts. And if you watch a lot of the Championship, the broadcasts are identical. And their talent is identical. And that was kind of the case here. Streaming issues, they were minimal, but for me, they popped up at the wrong time. So popped up in the dramatic extra time between Lakeland and the Villages, match here in Florida, between two of the better teams in this state. And then popped up in the penalty kick shootout between Red Bulls, the Red Bulls youth team, under 23 team, and FC Motown, who were the runners-up in the NPSL, national runners-up last season. So, and the penalty kicks were 2-2 when it started to buffer for me, And by the time it got fixed, I saw Red Bull players celebrating. They had won the penalty kick. So those were just untimely, but nothing like the kind of buffering issues you've dealt with Bleacher Report, I've dealt with Bleacher Report and other services. I also had a streaming experience this week with Fox at Fox Sports Go on the Bayer Leverkusen Eintracht Frankfurt match, which ended up being 6-1, and Leverkusen scored all six of those goals in the first half, so there was no need to stream it past halftime. But with that, the FS2 stream was outstanding. The problem was, and I did not realize this for whatever reason, and maybe it's my settings, maybe it's Fox Sports Go, unless you are on Wi-Fi, you can't stream it. So basically, the points when I was only on my phone on 4G, I couldn't stream it. Then I got into a 5G area, it let me stream it, perfect stream, and then I got onto Wi-Fi, no problem, 6-1 at halftime. I'm not going to watch the rest of this. But that was interesting. I don't know if that's a Fox Sports Go feature or some sort of security feature I inadvertently activated just for Fox Sports Go, because I don't have that with Bleacher Report, ESPN Plus, or NBC Sports Go. So
yeah, that was interesting. That's the first time I'm hearing about that. But listeners, if you've experienced the same thing or have some kind of feedback or insight to share about that, let us know in the listener mailbag section. Now, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, big news.
Yeah, so I'm excited about this. This week, ESPN will be showing a Sunday Serie A match between Roma and Juventus on the big channel, on the big ESPN. Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti will call the match live from Stadio Olimpico in Rome. It's only the second time an Italian league fixture has been on the main ESPN channel. So this is exciting. Unfortunately, the title is decided, but fourth is not. And just a little pro tip here, I try to think of myself as a pro. If you haven't watched Atalanta, who's currently sitting in fourth in Serie A, you're missing out. To me, outside of maybe Ajax and Liverpool, the best team to watch in Europe this season.
Yeah, and Frankfurt, I would add to that too, as far as...
Sorry, they're on that list too, yeah.
So on Tuesday, I had the pleasure to attend a Univision press conference in Miami to learn more about the soccer programming developments. And boy, was I shocked. I wasn't expecting this at all. The big news is that Univision Deportes Network announced that their channel will be changing their name. And the new name, the first time I saw it, I thought, okay, how do you pronounce this thing? So it's the acronym is TUDN, but the way you pronounce it is TUDN, which is the Spanish translation of kind of, which is meant to be kind of your sports network. Deportes Sports Network, of course, network. So, TUDN, in a strategic alliance with Televisa, which is the largest media company in the Spanish-speaking world. So what this does is brings together the sports departments of Univision Deportes and Televisa for the first ever bi-national sports network. So you're going to have coverage and analysts and commentators and shows that previously would have been on Televisa are now going to be on the TUDN or TUDN, available in the United States. So what it's going to do is actually make Univision Deportes even bigger and better than what it was before. The other thing, too, there's a lot of details about this. It goes into a lot of details about all this big massive change and when it's happening, etc. The other thing too is that they have a streaming service that's going to be coming out too, called TUDN Extra. But head on over to the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com, where it goes into a lot of detail about that. One more thing is that Univision Deportes has announced that it has renewed the rights, the U.S. TV rights, to the Mexican national team through 2022. And Kartik, some more interesting news that happened this past week.
Yeah, so in an article in the Hollywood Reporter last week, Bundesliga CEO Robert Klein dropped a few hints about where the Bundesliga might be going after this deal with Fox ends in May 2020. Here's what he said. This is a direct quote. Quote, we're the stakeholder of clubs, so certainly the money factor is a big one. Having said that, the growth of the brand and its penetration and presence is important. So you'll always have this balance between typically free-to-air, paid pay TV and, let's say, OTT and digital. It's usually a balance, but you can also more and more in the market look at the right matrices and that could deliver across all three. And then when you have all the offers on the table, you can make a decision. End quote. Now, I'm not sure if Fox's decision to show the last two match days on Big Fox has something to do with that free-to-air comment, because that I thought was kind of interesting that they're doing that after having shown no interest in showing a free-to-air matches this season, with the exception of the Dortmund-Bayern match, which was a huge match. It may be that they are still trying to appeal to the Bundesliga, Chris, based on the fact that they do offer the opportunity or offer the vehicle to show matches free to air in the United States that probably no one else who bids on the rights will have.
Yeah, this is huge. This is a huge question mark because to me, I think with Fox, it was more about timing. So, for example, this coming weekend, if there was NASCAR on, that all the Bundesliga games would be on pretty much on FS2, except for the early Sunday morning game. I think it's more about timing, is that usually a few times a year, towards the end of the season, they have some of the games on over-the-air television. But having said that, though, too, I mean, this quote from the Bundesliga international CEO is dropping some hints. I mean, he's definitely saying, okay, we're going to look at all offers on the table. But if you're looking for somebody that has free-to-air access, pay-to-TV, and/or over-the-top, kind of a digital streaming package, I would look at ESPN for this. So you have now whether ESPN is interested, and whether the Bundesliga would be interested, but whether ESPN is interested in adding this on, that's a whole different story. But free-to-air, ESPN technically has ABC. As an option, as a free-to-air television, outlet. They haven't used that for soccer in a long time since the 2014 World Cup or 2010. Actually, 2010 World Cup, I think it was. So they have free-to-air, pay TV. Obviously, they have ESPN, ESPN2, OTT, and digital. They've got ESPN Plus. They've also got ESPN3. So ESPN represents one of the few companies that offers all of those together in one package that they could go to the Bundesliga. Now, I don't think that ESPN would be interested in that unless there's a bargain buy. So I think in many ways, I don't know. We've talked about many different ways that the Bundesliga, where it could go in the future. Maybe it does stick with Fox. Maybe they say, okay, Fox has free-to-air, yes, has pay TV with FS1 and FS2, has OTT and digital with the Fox Soccer Match Pass and the Fox Sports to Go. Fox Sports Go apps. So it has that, but we've seen too in terms of just the treatment that the Bundesliga gets from the Fox, which is really half-hearted. It's used as filler content. So that's not a good fit either. But there's plenty of time to figure out and look at those offers, but it's interesting to note that the Bundesliga are in talks, and I'm sure they're shopping it around and trying to see which is the best package for them. Now, in a related story to the Bundesliga, digital sports streaming service DAZN dropped some hints last week about how the company will be doing business in the United States, and the prospect may be that they'll acquire some soccer rights in the future. DAZN president John Skipper said in an interview with Forbes magazine last week, "We are trying to drive people to a year-long subscription. If you figure out a way to get people to buy for a year, you have 100% retention for the year." Also, DAZN is actively looking at acquiring more rights. John Skipper said there will be the existing partners and possibly tech companies, plus pure over-the-top options. You will have at least one pure play over-the-top at the table, and that will be DAZN. So what Skipper is saying here is that for any rights deal that comes up, so the Bundesliga, which is going to expire in May 2020, which is going to be the same month as La Liga expires, you can pretty much guarantee that DAZN will have an offering to La Liga and to the Bundesliga and other sports leagues as well, whatever's available, for a pure play, over-the-top subscription model. So if you're La Liga and you want to go ahead and get your La Liga or the Bundesliga into as many homes in the United States, you're not going to get free to air through that deal, but you could get a pure play over the top option where DAZN could stream all the games available via streaming. So interesting times. DAZN's definitely a player. The whole idea of having a year-long subscription makes sense rather than month-to-month. And if you're somebody that loves La Liga and the price point is good, sure, go ahead and sign up for the whole year. Why not? Same thing with the Bundesliga. We know that a lot of people have signed up for the Fox Soccer Match Pass for an entire year and watch all the games through there. But yeah, so watch this space. One more last late breaking news item, and that is the news that FuboTV will be launching a free ad-supported version of their streaming service near the end of the year. It'll be interesting to see which channels are included in the offering. And they've also announced that they will be venturing into original programming too. So maybe we'll get a soccer documentary or series out of them. Who knows? And Kartik, I'm not sure if you remember, but when we spoke to the CEO of FuboTV, probably about 3 years ago now, maybe 2 years ago to 3 years ago, at that time he was talking about original programming, talking about doing documentaries, talking about doing some different shows that they were thinking of. That got tabled. That never happened. But here we are, 2019, and looks like that might happen. Whether or not it's going to be soccer, we'll have to wait and see. But another one, something else to look forward to.
Chris, it was actually 4 years ago at Sportel in Miami in 2015. Oh, I remember it well, yeah. I was one of the first FUBO subscribers, or at least I was able to tell them, hey, I signed up to your service, and it was great for me because I've been locked into that price for years, and it's just great to have been on board early.
When it comes to NBC's coverage of the Premier League, the first person you may think of is Rebecca Lowe, or Kyle Martino, or Ola White, or the two Robbies. But the main man behind the scenes that's responsible for leading the production of the Premier League on US TV is Pierre Moussa, who serves as coordinating producer for NBC Sports Group's coverage of the Premier League. Pierre was gracious enough this week to spare some of his valuable time to discuss with us the coverage of the Premier League, as well as a preview of the coverage of Championship Sunday. Here's that interview. But the first question I had was that we got a little bit of a surprise on Monday when NBC Sports had decided to feature the Brighton-Man City game as kind of the featured game on NBCSN, while the Liverpool-Wolves game would be featured on NBC, which is obviously more prominent in terms of in more homes. Now, this was Monday before we knew what happened on Tuesday in the Champions League and just everything that happened in that game. What was the thought process, though, kind of going back, rewinding back to Monday and before that, in thinking about putting Liverpool against Wolves as the top game on Sunday?
I think the simple answer is no matter what happens, the drama is going to be at Anfield. And that was something we put a lot of thought into, is that if City go up and they're leading the title race, the imagery and scenes at Anfield are going to be compelling. And if for some reason it's a draw at City and Liverpool up, the scenes are going to be compelling no matter what. So the bottom line editorially is the stories at Anfield, and this season is going to be remembered for one of the most competitive title races ever. And most likely what's going to happen is that City are going to win the title and Liverpool are going to finish second. And I think the majority of people are going to remember the season for the incredible job and the fact that Liverpool finished second with 97 points. And the imagery and scenes at Anfield are going to be so compelling for our audience. That was the main reason. And City being on the road at Brighton, it just won't be nearly as compelling. So no matter what happens, the drama is going to be at Anfield, and that was the main factor in it. And in fairness to all of our audience, every match is available, so it's not like it's going to be difficult for anybody to be able to find the City match for that matter. And the post-game Goal Zone show is going to be covered on both networks, NBCSN and NBC. So from that standpoint, we're really just talking about a channel to be on versus anything else. And so bottom line is we truly believe that the imagery at Anfield will be the most compelling for our audience.
Yeah, and I completely understand that too, especially with the Amex Stadium, as beautiful as it is at Brighton, it is kind of more of an open, expansive stadium rather than Liverpool's Anfield, which is really is a cauldron. But how much does TV ratings play into that? I mean, is that something, not even just this game, but just all season long, how much of a factor is that in influencing production decisions or programming decisions?
Well, programming decisions are really influenced by the fixtures, and we don't control that. So generally the way it works, and you know this quite well, is that Sky picks the fixtures or BT picks the fixtures, the Premier League then puts them out, and then that determines everything. And due to our NBC obligations, we can't typically put a broadcast on NBC prior to 12:30 on the weekends and Saturday and Sunday due to news and children obligations. So most of the time, our programming plans are determined by the matches. So ratings obviously are very important, and it's what our business is based on. But the production decisions are very, very little based on ratings, because you just don't really have control of the programming. I mean, sorry, programming decisions are very little determined by ratings, because you just don't have control of it.
Now, this season has been, for the viewer, it's been transformational in many ways for the coverage of the Premier League by NBC Sports, with the integration of more Sky Sports coverage, as well as the acquisition of Clive Tyldesley, and the remarkable Premier League Fan Fest, which was, I think, the best one yet. How much more do you think that, how much more can you envision the bar being raised by NBC Sports? It's got to be difficult, but can you envision, you mean in subsequent seasons, the bar being raised even higher?
Well, that's our responsibility to our audiences, to raise the bar each higher each season. And if you look over the course of the last 6 years, each year we're trying to improve our coverage. Each year we're trying to find different ways to help the game grow in the United States. And each year we're trying to find different ways for our audience to consume the Premier League. And I'd even throw in there the Pick'em game, which a lot of people truly enjoy, or the YouTube series with the Lowdown, the Tactics Session, and Inside the Mind. Any way we can give our audience another avenue to consume and appreciate the Premier League ultimately helps them become fans, become supporters, and helps grow the game. So to answer your question in short, that's our number one goal. A lot of times we get the question, well, what's the plans for next year? Our philosophy has always been, when we have an idea, we're not going to wait till next year. We're going to start it out. We're going to do it immediately. And hence, whether it's the Pick'em game starting on Boxing Day, or the YouTube series developing over the course of the year, or the Fan Fest becoming 1 to 2 days. The moment there's a really good idea, we're not going to wait to implement it for the next year. We want to execute it immediately. But in short, that's our responsibility to our audience and to the supporters of the Premier League and to the Premier League themselves, to find different ways to continue to enhance our broadcast and enhance our offerings.
So the integration of Sky Sports into, whether it's, you know, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, or we saw even just a recent kind of a Friday Night Football where it was the entire Sky Sports broadcast, but definitely bits and pieces, and they've accentuated the broadcasts, whether it's Kelly Cates post-match interviews, I mean, Jurgen Klopp on the pitch interviews, those types of things. Is that something you envision that we will see a little bit more of as each season goes along, as you try to balance the best of NBC Sports with the best of Sky Sports?
Absolutely. We're one company, and there's tremendous synergies between Sky and NBC, and ultimately both audiences on both sides of the pond are going to benefit from it. What you're not familiar with is Robbie Earl, Kyle, and Robbie Musto are doing two ways into Sky Sports News on the weekdays. So there's often ways it works both ways in our, and during the transfer deadline day show, we simulcast their broadcast, and then we are also a big part of integrating into their broadcast with some hits as well. So ultimately, what I'd say is, if you're on this side of the pond in the United States, you get the best of both worlds. We'll start off with the fact that you have our continued coverage plan and the access and resources we get as international broadcasters. And one of the biggest things is we have exposure to all the matches, and we can show highlights from all the matches, and we can distribute all the matches, where in England they're limited to just the ones that are on, that are picked by the TV broadcasters. So you get the international offerings that are unique to being an international broadcaster, and then we also get the bonus of all the benefits of being a host broadcaster, with Sky being on site and being able to take advantage of some of the access that only the host broadcaster gets, and that is sometimes the pitch side interviews or the access that Friday Night Football gets. So especially starting next season, you're going to see a lot more synergies between the two broadcasts, and you're also going to see the U.S. audience benefiting even more from having Sky be a part of the Comcast family.
The Friday night football one a few weeks ago, was that a one-off in terms of just scheduling and it being convenient to have the Friday night football from Sky Sports, the entire broadcast, or is that something in the future we could see more of?
No, it was a one-time opportunity for us to really show off Sky's incredible Friday night broadcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the Monday night football broadcast from Sky Sports, which some people look at as kind of the pinnacle of analysis, is that something that could happen in the future in terms of whether it's scheduling or kind of taking that Monday night football feed and using that also?
We'll probably be integrating a lot of things they will be doing into our broadcast, and we're working very closely with Sky to figure out what works and what doesn't work, but we'll still be doing our own bespoke NBC broadcast for all the Premier League coverage. And one of the things that we feel really is important, especially, is that our group, especially our talent, have an incredible connection with our audience and a connection with how everybody appreciates the Premier League over here. And what we don't want to do is lose that connection. There's plenty of things that Sky does that's incredible that appeals specifically to the English audience. And we want to make sure that the broadcast that we're doing is tailored towards an American audience.
Now, the addition of Clive Tyldesley to the broadcast of Premier League matches, which I was flabbergasted when he mentioned, I think on social media, that this was the very first time he had ever commentated a Premier League game in his long history as a professional journalist, a professional broadcaster, commentator. Having had the exclusive contract with ITV, and obviously ITV was doing mostly Champions League for many, many years. But how did that process begin? I mean, how long ago did this discussions begin? And how did you, kind of find Clive Tyldesley, or how did you kind of romance him to convince him to go ahead and work for NBCSN doing some of these Premier League games?
Well, first of all, I had no idea. So when I saw that tweet as well, I reached out to him and was like, you got to be kidding me. You didn't even tell me this. So it is really remarkable, and he's called some of the most iconic moments in football history. So to be able to have him be a part of our broadcast is fantastic. I think the simple answer for you is that we're constantly looking at different ways how we can improve our broadcast, and some may be simple and some may be more elaborate. And, Clive and I had a little bit of communication in the fall, and he was very much a part of the Impossible Dream, the treble documentary that we did in Manchester United, and he was a key part of it. So when I went over to England, we ended up I did the interview with him for that documentary, and then we sat down and had a lunch after that at his local, as they call it in England, his local, which is the local pub. And we chatted a little bit about it, and then when the opportunity kind of arrived, I reached out to him and asked if he'd be interested, and he was. And it's worked out brilliantly, because especially in the last month and a half or last 6 weeks, the title race has been so compelling, and to be able to have the ability to have two on-site announce teams to be able to cover Liverpool and City, as well as the other matches we have to cover, whether it's the NBC matches, et cetera, it's been worked out really well. So I think with everything we're doing, we're constantly looking at how we can enhance our broadcast. But just to be clear, and so there's no qualms about it, Arlo is our lead commentator, and he's our lead commentator for as long as we are working on the Premier League. And there's no plans to make any changes to our on-air team. We love Lee and Graham, and obviously Rebecca, the two Robbies, and Kyle. They're a fantastic team. And I think it's a tribute to the fact that, you know, for the last 6 years, there haven't really been any changes to the core team, because they're so good and the chemistry is so good, and they truly are the best ambassadors for the Premier League. But as we reach a point where we can't all be in the same place at the same time, or candidly in two places at the same time, then it's important to be able to find the right people that can help enhance our broadcast. And don't forget, Derek Ray was a part of it as well, and he did some extra commentary as well, and we worked with many different people, Steve Bauer as well. Steve got many more Premier League production responsibilities. So each year we're always looking at different people that can help enhance our broadcast and contribute to the team, and Clive was somebody who has made some contributions this season and been a fantastic addition.
Now, is that something that's kind of always in the back of your mind, that you're looking out for, say, co-coms, or you have a short list of co-coms that you want to bring in whenever available? And I'm thinking of, like, for example, we've seen some good work from, I mean, Stephen Warnock, Leon Osman, Phil Neville. Oftentimes when it is, say, specifically an NBC commentating, you're pulling in the co-coms. Is that something you're always kind of looking out to see who's available, who's doing good work, to see who might be available in the future if there's an opportunity for a co-commentator?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that we're not actively looking for more people to add. I think our group, our group is exceptional, but oftentimes we can't always be everywhere. And so when the time arises, you know, we look to see who might be able to contribute. And again, that goes back to your question about ratings and everything else, decision making. The fixtures determine a lot of the plan. And, you know, when the fixtures come out, you look at them and you figure out, okay, here's where we want to put the main core team, but we could have a potential here where we need to be in two places at once. How do we want to handle it? And that's always the challenge. So ultimately, when those arise, we then, you know, stay in touch with all the key people that are over in England, and that may be possible additions. And then when we figure out what's the right fit for our broadcast.
Now, since this Premier League contract, or between NBC Sports and the Premier League began, it's now, I think 6 years. It's flown by. But have you personally seen improvement in terms of just the working relationships between, say, NBC Sports and the Premier League, whether it's access, whether it's kind of just working more closely together, and also with the clubs themselves? I mean, Liverpool, a perfect example in terms of in addition to many, many clubs being involved in the Premier League Fan Fest, definitely, I mean, the Fenway Sports Group and working closely with them. But have you seen kind of the relationships, I mean, not that they were bad at all, but have you seen them evolve as time goes on, as maybe your needs increase and they see the opportunities to get more coverage or to work closely together?
What I would say about that is that our relationships, whether it's with the Premier League, the clubs, or Sky, or BT, that matter, have always been really, really strong. So from day one, they've been very strong. What I would say is that with every relationship, they become even stronger over the length of time. So I wouldn't say that it's been, you know, you could say, oh, yeah, our relationship is much better. Our relationship has always been fantastic. Just the duration of that, and as we work closer together, and we've built different activations. So the Premier League is a co-production on the Fan Fest, and that's been such a great initiative that we work closely with them. For Liverpool, we've always had a very good relationship with them, but then be able to do the In the Shadow Cop series, which was over 6 weeks on multi-platforms, that's only made our relationship even stronger. But I don't want to make it seem like our relationships weren't strong. From the very beginning, our relationships with all 20 clubs, with the Premier League itself, with Sky, with BT, has always been very strong, and that's paramount to the success of any production, any broadcast, but especially with the Premier League. The relationship is so important to us.
Absolutely. And my last question, Pierre, is out of all of the coverage that you've done this entire season, is there one game or one weekend that for you was your proudest moment in terms of the production?
I think all of us, it's like trying to pick your favorite kid. I would say that we were all very, very proud of the most recent Fan Fest in Boston. And when I say what made us so proud, obviously it was a fantastic scene and a fantastic broadcast, but I think it was also something that you could say that it was something the culmination of 6 years of hard work have built up to be able to truly see what the growth of the Premier League has become, and to see that many people in one place celebrating something so unique. That was one of those, you kind of take a breath and go, wow, this is pretty special. I would say that that's less of a production and much more of a, you know, all the hard work that an entire company has done, from marketing to social to digital to the production side of it to every aspect of the people in the company. That was a company-wide initiative. And again, the support for the Premier League has been a company-wide initiative, but that was the culmination of 6 years of hard work by an entire company to see the 12,000 people dancing up and down and jumping after the late winner at Anfield, and just realizing how special a scene that was. That was one of those wow moments, and you know, we hope there's plenty more of that, but that would be the one that I would kind of take away of when you finish that broadcast, you kind of sat down and said, did we really just throw a party with that many people celebrating the Premier League in Boston? I mean, that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. Actually, just one last question before I forget. Is this Sunday's championship Sunday, of course, and from a production point of view or from the viewer's side of things, are there anything in particular that any things to look forward to that's kind of in addition to what we're accustomed to seeing, whether it's overhead shots or whether I know there's the two-hour pre-match coverage, which is going to be fantastic, but any other secrets or anything you can share with us in terms of some of the things you're looking forward to broadcasting?
Well, again, you know me well enough that I'm going to give you the boring answer and say making sure that the coverage is sound as possible for the viewer. One of the biggest things that we're going to focus on is how do we keep the audience at Anfield up to date with what's going on at Brighton and vice versa. So there's be three ways we'll be doing that. One will be our announcers themselves will be updating with the scores, and then ultimately Arlo and Clive will be keeping people abreast of what the scores are and the significance of those scores. The second way is the top right corner. You're going to have the scores in the top right corner, so you know exactly what's going on with all 10 matches, not just the other one, but that will be constantly keeping you up to date. And then if there was a key event that happened at a respective match, we would do a pitcher-in-pitcher, a double box kind of game break at the appropriate time when stoppage play has happened, where Rebecca would show that key play and give you an update on how it affects the title race while never leaving the live seeds in the other box. So that's been really our biggest focus, is how we keep everybody abreast of what's happening at the other matches, especially with such an important title race. So that's been the biggest focus. And then the pre-match show, we're going to do what we call a mega highlight, which will break down the key fine margins in the title race, the back and forth, whether it's the Merseyside late goal or a late goal in this match that led to City took the lead, or back and forth, whatever it is, throughout the season, so really people really know this seesaw title race battle and how we got to this point. And it's the goal line clearance that was made, the key events that will make sure that got us to this point, so people really have significance of what's going to happen.
Perfect.
Of what got us to this point, sure. And that will set up what potential will happen on Sunday.
Awesome. Great. Well, thanks, Pierre. Thank you so much, and best of luck on Sunday. We've been watching Bromwich almost every single hour of the broadcast for 6 years, so it's great stuff and great entertainment, and hopefully it's going to be an exciting finale on Sunday, because it could go so many different ways.
You know, we've been spent the whole year just hoping for it to go down to the final wire and have the title decided on the final day. And now I'm getting a little greedy and hoping that it'll go down to the final moments on Sunday. But it's been a phenomenal season. I think all of us are going to be really sad to see it end, because it's been such an amazing, amazing title run. And no matter what happens, Sunday's going to be up for – there's going to be a lot of drama on Sunday.
All right, so TV ratings, we won't go into a lot of detail about this. We will have all of the numbers within the next couple of days at worldsoccertalk.com. But just a couple that I'll highlight, and Kartik, if there's any of these that jump out at you, feel free. For last week's Barcelona-Liverpool game, so this is the one, the first leg on TNT, Univision, and Univision Deportes Network, 1.39 million people tuned into this one. The Spurs against Ajax game, again, the first leg at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, that was 1 million viewers tuned in across TNT, Univision, and Univision Deportes Network. Let me see what else we got here too. This week's Liverpool-Barcelona game, we don't have the Univision numbers yet, but this week the second leg of the semi-final on TNT, 665,000 viewers, which is pretty incredible when you think about it, Kartik. This is, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's during office hours. This is, in lunchtime in California, but no matter where you live in the United States, everyone works like crazy. These are some massive numbers for midweek games.
Yeah, that's a huge number, 665,000. FS1 never got to that, or even I think when they had matches on FX, they never quite got to FX's distribution, more comparable to TNT's. Never quite had that number. I have to remind people, TNT is a highly rated network typically, and is in more homes, I think, than even the ESPN network. So it's a really, I know it's not a sports network, and they're generally associated with NBA. They don't show NFL. They don't show a lot of the other sports that people think about when they associate with sports networks, ESPN, Fox, etc. But for UEFA in this country, it has given them a bigger platform than Fox does for these sorts of matches. Now, the final is a big question because you said it'll be on TNT. I think that's a good call by them. But, of course, the final was always on over-the-air Fox. So that's where we'll probably get a really good metric. If that's comparable to the over-the-air Fox numbers from the previous seasons, and, of course, you're going to have two English clubs, so that's a bit of an advantage. Then you have to say for UEFA, this is really business well done because I think at this point, I'm not talking about the match coverage or, you know, the clunkiness of Bleacher Report or you know, the Fox pregame with Grant Wall, any of that. I'm just talking about pure numbers, pure exposure for UEFA, pure credibility. It's also more credible to be on Turner than to be on FS1, quite honestly, just in the industry. So this is a big win for UEFA and for Champions League so far.
Absolutely. And it's even bigger win for Univision because these big numbers that we're sharing, I mean, more than 50% of those viewers are coming in through Univision or Univision Deportes Network. The coverage that they've had all season has been very consistent. Yes, the final is not going to be the two teams that they want in the final, but that will still generate big numbers there for Univision. TNT is going to get an advantage there where they won't get as big as numbers as Univision, but at least they'll have a very Anglo-centric final with the teams in there. So that'll help raise their numbers, hopefully, too. But at the end of the day, I guess the winner is UEFA. UEFA wins big time in this one. And these numbers that we've been sharing throughout the entire season, overall, are much, much bigger than what the previous rights cycle was through Fox Sports, where they had FS1, FS2, and also Fox Deportes. All right, listener mailbag. First up is Herb. 6115, he says, regarding Yahoo Sports and the NWSL coverage, after seeing their coverage of the CONCACAF Champions League, if they're going to be the NWSL's prime provider, then the NWSL is in serious trouble, and not even the Women's World Cup can save them. I think it's time for US soccer to learn from UEFA regarding Women's League soccer. This means that MLS is going to have to offer some financial assistance to the NWSL, or more would need to have their own women's teams. It would provide a lot of economic stability for many women's footballers in the U.S. Kartik, this is a topic that's been raised a few times this week in terms of NWSL the viability of this league, but also the TV coverage in terms of this is definitely a huge step down. It's in a limbo stage where somebody needs to come in to really, I mean, there's the whole question mark about USSF and how involved they are with the U.S. women in comparison to the U.S. men's teams. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, so first off, I was in the room and was reporting on Javier O'Callaghan's comments earlier from FC Barcelona about NWSL and the interest that FC Barcelona has in their women's team and placing a women's team in NWSL, and also, you know, implications of Nike deals, et cetera. And we saw a lot of commentary about that after my colleague Bob Williams wrote an article about it, and I was tweeting from there. So that, I thought that was an interesting conversation starter. What you have to understand is their competing interests. First of all, I agree with Herb. I think we need to see more commitment from MLS teams. We need to see more step up the way Portland has and fund their women's team. Now, Orlando and Houston also have women's teams in NWSL, but I think they're kind of redheaded stepchild, the bastard stepchildren of the men's team. You need to see a little more quality with that, the way we're seeing from the major European powers. That having been said, you have to understand the competing interest here. There are a lot of people in women's soccer in the United States who don't necessarily want their clubs tied to men's clubs, partly because of the history of men's clubs not having an egalitarian approach towards women's football, but also because, quite frankly, women's football has accomplished more in this country, women's soccer, than men's soccer, and putting it in a potentially subservient position to men's soccer, the women's national team subservient to the men's national team, women's club soccer subservient to men's club soccer is not necessarily the route you want to go in. And it's also very important to note that there are so many more major college women's programs in this country than men's college soccer, major men's college soccer programs. So there are competing interests. I think what Herb is outlining is the way I would go, but there, the, I just outlined why there's a lot of pushback on doing going in that direction. And also reluctance on MLS's part also has to be pointed out.
Next up is Nick. Nick says, to what extent can and should broadcasters make all of the contents to which they own the rights to through dedicated subscription services, for example, Fox Soccer, Match Pass, NBC Sports Gold, Premier League, etc.? I'm thinking of two examples, he said. At the top of the top end of the problem, I signed up for Fox Soccer Match Pass, only to discover that it didn't include matches presented on Big Fox, which is not available over the air or through Sling in my area, which obviously were the matches I most wanted to watch. I immediately cancelled. What's the point of having a subscription service if it excludes the best contents? What does Fox gain by doing that? At the trailing end of the problem, what do you think of rights holders not making some of the contents available at all? I'm a college football fan that spends a lot of time in Canada, and a few years back, ESPN had a dedicated package for those located in Canada and another one for Europe that included all of their college football content. Then TSN bought cable college football rights for Canada but didn't stream them, making it impossible to watch those games legally. I'm assuming something similar must be happening in soccer, such as early phases of the FA Cup with ESPN Plus. Insofar as broadcasts are already produced for other markets, how much do the rights holders have to lose by just relaying those? I might be missing some variables, but knowing that you guys can enlighten me is the precise reason why I enjoy your podcast. Keep up the good work. Yeah, the Fox Soccer Match Pass issue is something that even when they had the Premier League games way back when, before NBC acquired them, and the Fox Soccer To Go would have the Premier League matches, and then you'd have some of the games on Fox Soccer Channel or FS1 as it later became. You'd have some games on Big Fox, or maybe it was the FA Cup. FA Cup's an even better example. We'd have FA Cup games, maybe it's Man United against West Ham in a semi-final. And you'd have that on Big Fox, but you couldn't get that on your Fox Soccer To Go, which became Fox Soccer Match Pass later on, even though you're paying for Fox Soccer Match Pass. Some of it is that they want to try to get people that to watch that game on television as much as possible to bump up those numbers, and those are going to be the bigger numbers, and those are the numbers that they're trying to achieve so that they can, in terms of working with advertisers and say, hey, look at all the millions of people, or over a million people watching these games. And then the subscription streaming package is almost like a redheaded stepchild in many ways for some of these broadcasters, where it doesn't get as much of the attention or love that it should get, and those are more the diehard fans. Any thoughts on this, Kartik? Any enlightenment that you can give to Nick as far as why things work the way that they do?
Yeah, I mean, they're just these different strange contractual agreements, and a lot of them were signed before others. So, the idea of digital rights weren't necessarily thrown in them. With college football in particular, there is an issue, and this came up at the Sport Decision Makers Conference. We had Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-10, speaking there. Pac-12. I still am not used to it. It used to be the Pac-10. Been the Pac-12 for like a decade now. But there are some college conferences that signed long-term deals with ESPN or Fox, way back when, 10, 12, 14-year deals, and this is, you're seeing out of it the launch of the ACC network this summer. The SEC network is an ESPN property that launched a few years ago. The Big Ten network is a Fox property, but essentially, they didn't have some of these components of digital rights, international rights, things that might be important in these contracts. So it's a slippery slope. I think we'll see more kind of uniformity in the next round of negotiations. But the industry is moving so quickly, which was another theme at this conference I was at, that we could be sitting in 2024 saying, gosh, when these new deals were signed in 2020, they didn't think of this or they didn't think of that. So it's not like traditional, in the past you would traditionally negotiate with a broadcaster and that was kind of that. And you would have international rights, or you wouldn't have international rights. You would have, you wouldn't think about other languages. You wouldn't think about all these other components, streaming, OTT services that now are in the space.
Yeah, plus the other thing, too, is right now, in this moment in time, and in the previous years, most of the money that broadcasters could generate was from the television side of things. And the streaming side was, yes, I mean, kind of giving it to some of the fans who want that streaming side, but that's not what they wanted, because they didn't want people cutting the cord and then losing all those subscription fees from the different TV networks and being on the different TV platforms and having everyone go to streaming. Those times are changing, like you said, Kartik. Things are changing in an industry, and the streaming side is becoming more popular, and there's ways to generate a lot of revenue on that side, as we've seen from ESPN Plus, even though they're losing money in terms of, I mean, the amount of money they're spending on the rights. They're gaining tons of subscribers, over 2 million subscribers. Eventually, the long-term effect of ESPN Plus is that's going to be a money-making operation. They're planning for the future. A lot of TV networks right now are not doing the same thing. They're kind of holding on to the TV, hoping that they can continue to milk that cow for as long as they can before they get to a point where they have to focus more on the streaming side. Alex says, I'm looking at cutting the cord and then going with Fubo TV or Hulu Live or YouTube TV for my services. I'd like to hear an updated thoughts on your streaming experiences. So, Alex, for me, Hulu Live and YouTube TV both are great streaming services, but the number one reason that I don't use those, either of those two, is because they don't have beIN Sports. Fubo TV, I can say 100% of the... I use that daily. I'm using that for... pretty much all, most of my soccer coverage I'm watching, so from the TNT, the Fox Sports, FS1s, the NBCSNs, etc. And then I have Sling TV, Sling Orange, to watch the ESPN games. So that's the way I look at things. For me, Fubo TV has been consistent. The quality's been great. They keep on adding new channels, and I've had no problems. What about you, Kartik? What's been your experience? What's your streaming service of choice these days?
Well, I mean, I have Fubo, I have ESPN Plus, I have Bleacher Report Live, I have all of these. Amazon Prime is generally my streaming service of choice, but they don't necessarily have a lot of live programming yet. That's changing. But yeah, I mean, I think they're all good. They're different, varying levels of reliability. But when you're talking about Hulu, Fubo, YouTube TV, those are three in particular, there's not much to separate them. They're all very good in terms of, and I think for YouTube TV and for Hulu in particular, they wanted to get the technology right before they went live, and it wasn't just on demand or archived videos that they let you stream. So I think they've done a good job. I'm looking forward to Disney Plus. That's going to be launched in the very, very near future.
Yep. Tim Keane says, I've watched the games for the past 2 weeks and have enjoyed all of the commentators in the Champions League except Guy Mowbray. To me, he seems like a cheerleader for the Ajax, and I was really surprised that he does not take any semblance of the normal neutral that we have to come to expect. He was saved by Stuart Robson, and the after-game show seemed on TNT to lack professionalism. Analysts should not let their team favorites take over. It just seemed ridiculous to me. And Tim, going back to the first segment on the show, there's two completely different takes on this. I'm okay with Steve Nash. We know that he's a Spurs fan. Sometimes it gets a little bit too much, where it's like, okay, we know you're a Spurs fan, but you're on the show not because you're a Spurs fan, but because you're supposed to add some objective analysis or some observations. But you can't prevent him from celebrating and getting emotional about Spurs going all the way to the Champions League final. Yeah, it depends. I mean, it's Guy Mowbray, I know, has gotten a lot of criticism. Stuart Robson is definitely more down the middle of in terms of his balance. Guy Mowbray, most of the work he does is for Match of the Day, doing the Premier League week in, week out. So he probably doesn't realize to the global audience how he sounds very pro-English that he is. But I don't think that's on purpose. I think he's just doing it naturally. And that's what we get from that sometimes. Two more quick items in our listener mailbag section. Chris Hardy says, I wanted to ask you, and you don't have to wait till the show, you told me to avoid the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror, but was that just for transfer news or in general? I find that the Daily Mail interesting stuff. Plus, they had the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to United breaking news. Plus, they have other good stuff that's not transfers. Thanks again. Have a great weekend. I mean, it's definitely, in terms of just transfer rumors, player to player, for player from here to there, both the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror are not the worst offenders. They get a lot of stuff wrong. They get some things right. But it's clickbait. They're just generating story after story. Any little bit of information or any bit of rumor. I would recommend The Guardian or BBC in terms of more objective analysis and discussion. But it depends what you want. And yes, the Daily Mail has some good articles now and again. The Daily Mirror sometimes has some good articles, but just my take on that. Anthony Bello says, "Hi guys, I have a question about Championship Sunday. With me living in an area not serviced by a NBC regional sports network, will I still be able to stream the Crystal Palace Bournemouth match on the NBC Sports app, or am I SOL?" So for those that don't know, this Sunday, Championship Sunday, all the games will be live across all of the NBC networks, including the NBC regional sports network for the Crystal Palace Bournemouth game, which isn't available everywhere. I don't think it's available in Florida, Kartik, where we are. But if you do want to watch that match, all of the games, no matter what channel you want to watch the games on, but all of the games will be available on NBCSports.com at 10 a.m. on Eastern on Sunday. So you can still watch it through the main website if you want to watch it through there. All right, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into what could be a historic weekend for Manchester City, a chance to win the double, potentially a chance to win the treble.
Domestic treble. Yeah,
the domestic one, as well as so much other sports and soccer from around the world. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.